Hey guys, welcome back to the Spates Waterlad podcast. I am stoked to have Spates on board supporting Waterlad for season 4. And the reason I'm so stoked is because I do believe it is the best beer on the market. And the only real decision for me when I do go have a beer is, do I go for the Spates Gold Medal, the great tasting OG Lager, or the crisp and refreshing Summit Ultra with 75% less carbs? Always a very tough decision, but the beauty of it is there is no wrong decision to be made. So cheers to our mates at Spates for bringing you this episode. Good on you, mate. What a lad, and man, do I have an absolute lad for you guys for this one. Today's guest is arguably one of the greatest fullbacks to ever play the game. He started off as a Hawke's Bay sensation who quickly became a Crusader legend, who then went on to become an All Black great. This man has had some journey, and it's not just on the footy field either, where he's also excelled since footy, where he's become a radio and TV star, hosting Sen's morning show as well as doing TV commentary, and has even recently starred in his own TV show with Beaver, Clubhouse Rescue. And as you already know, this man's on this podcast for a good reason. He is one of the greatest lads in the country. It is the one and only Israel Dagg. Welcome, mate.
Oh, how you doing, Jimmy Ma? Look, it's an absolute privilege to be on this podcast. I love it because you're making a difference and you're telling good stories that I think can make a hell of a lot of difference. And I think it's only fitting, you know. I'm just a normal lad that had an awesome time throwing the pill around and going on a journey around the world, but post footy, just living life and just really want to share the story. And tough act to follow with Timmy Bateman, I must say. I get nervous at the best of times, but following on Timmy B, hopefully I can share some wisdom and some gravy for you right out there listening.
Oh, mate, you do have one of the best journeys out there. But you mentioned before that you hadn't been on another podcast before, so super grateful for choosing What a Lad as your first ever.
Oh, I've been asked to share the story plenty of times, and look, I've only really just jumped into the podcast. I'm still quite new and still haven't, you know, spread my wings and trying to listen to podcasts. Mm. But I obviously listened to Timmy B's and obviously listened to Fatia Lofa's one and obviously the injuries that he went through. And I just think it's a perfect kind of platform for myself to share the journey and share the stories. And yeah, I was thinking on the way here, I was like, how much do I actually share? Like,
yeah.
When you put that question, what do you want to ask Izzy Dagg? I was like, oh my, what little demons are going to come out up from nowhere and someone's going to ask some sort of question? But I'll be open, I'll be vulnerable, and I'll share it. And yeah, look, it's been an interesting time since I've retired. It's probably been the most difficult time in my 34 years of age. So yeah, I've just jumped into new industry was broadcasting and spreading my wings on TV and trying to make a living. It's yeah, I was listening to Timmy B and talking about the transition out of rugby. It's a difficult one, man. And you probably think, and people on the outside think, oh, you know, he's cracked it, he's doing well. But mate, honestly, I'm far from the finished product, and you know, there's still a lot of doubts that creep into my mind of why I'm doing this, what am I doing, who am I?
Yeah.
You know, I'm Izzy Dagg, you rattled off all the stats, but when you finish, you're like, wow, who am I really? I'm Izzy Dagg, the former rugby player. What am I going to be now?
Yeah.
You know?
Mate, it's crazy because, like you say, from the outside looking in, you're one of the guys who I'd put right up there as someone who's absolutely nailed their life after rugby transition. You pretty much went from rugby straight into TV and then radio when you had shows, and, you know, you're like this big personality, New Zealand celebrity. But deep down, you say you're struggling during that time, losing your identity as Israel Dagg, the superstar fullback.
Yeah, well, it's just one of those things because everyone knows you as Izzy Dagg, the rugby player, the All Black 66. You played tests for your country, the Crusaders. I'm looking along the walls at some of the greats. And that was a small part of my life and a big part that most people will know me as. Mm. And it's quite hard because when you finish, that's all taken away. And you're like, okay, So what now? What are people going to remember me as now? I am the former player. I am a has-been. I am a washed-up former athlete, but I've got to try and jump into this other industry. And I'll be completely honest, I didn't think I was going to be in broadcasting.
Yeah.
I never went to broadcasting school. I hardly ever went to school and actually paid attention and applied myself. So that was obviously at the back of my mind. But I guess the one thing I tried to do when I was playing is never change who I am, who I am as a person. Like, you can get caught up in it, and I'll be completely honest, I got caught up in the limelight and the spotlight and thought my shit didn't stink, and, you know, you get a bit carried away, and it wasn't until you get dealt a bit of adversity that actually brings you back and trying to make you realise, okay, I'm actually not as cool as I think I am. Mm. So you still had those doubts creeping in, and broadcasting was probably way out left field for me. I thought I'd go get a trade or just go get a normal 9 to 5 job and just do something. But I guess for me, I wasn't shy of who I was and who I am, and they saw the potential in me and gave me an opportunity to transition. So I'm very grateful for Sky Sport that given me that platform to allow me to finish when I was forced to retire.
Mm.
You know, I retired at 30.
I know, young age.
Young age, and it was not what I wanted. I thought I'd still be playing, and especially seeing Sammy Whitelock. I've made my debut with Sammy Whitelock, and he's still carving
Mate,
up.
What about Willie Hines?
Willie Hines. Like, honestly, like, these boys are just still going on and not looking a day over 30. Like, it's so good. But, my career got cut short, and I try and tell players these days to try and really – to plan for that life when it's all going to come, you know, all going to end, not when you want it to end, but it's going to end someday. And if you don't plan for it, man, it can be scary. And I know you've had plenty of messages in regards to Timmy Bateman's, like, when you finish, it's like, what now? You know, you've got 60 or maybe 50 odd years where you've got to live and you've got to earn.
Yeah.
And you got to make crust, and you got kids, you got to pay bills and put food on the table. It's difficult.
Had you set yourself up pretty well financially for that transition, or were you under pressure straight away?
I was lucky, man. I was very, very lucky throughout my career. And it wasn't until I met one of my best mates. You'd probably know him, Kurt Gibbons, up in Auckland.
Absolute wizard.
Yeah, he's a wizard. So before then, I thought owning a house was the end all. And don't get me wrong, like, having your own house, having your own bit of land is amazing. That's a wonderful achievement. But that's where my mind was at.
Mm.
And I was I just had a really narrow mindset of life after footy. And it wasn't until I met him, he kind of opened my mind up and expanded my mind to dream big and to try and work towards bigger and making life in that transition afterwards. So having him in my side and having him directing me and just heading me in the right direction kind of made that transition for life after footy a whole lot easier, and I'll be completely honest. But at the end of the day, like, you're never really settled, you're never really comfortable.
Mm.
In all reality, we've all got to work, and we all want to just retire. You know, they say retirement at 34, you retire. Well, when I retired at 30,
yeah,
I retired, but the reality is, you still got to have something to get you out of bed,
yeah,
and motivate you, and you know, you still got to pay bills, man, and that's the reality. So yeah, meeting him made life a whole lot easier, but you shouldn't just stop there.
Yeah,
you know, you got to continue to better yourself, to be better, and educate yourself. Like, I'm still trying to educate myself on a daily, learn and understand who I am as a person. I don't think I'll ever get to that situation when I've finally cracked it and I've made it.
Yeah.
I think everyone's still on that journey.
And it was your knees that forced you to retire, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was my knee. So I've got knock knee, so my knee's out of line. Most people are bow-legged. My knee actually goes in. Goes the other way.
Yeah.
So I've got bone on bone. I've got no cartilage. Everything's just really bone and bone, so it bruises, it swells, and that forced me to retire when I had no cartilage. In my last 2 years, I was hanging on. by a thread, and it wasn't for the help of.
Is that when you're in Japan?
Yeah, Japan, man, Japan. I fell for the Canon people in Japanese. They thought they'd signed this superstar from New Zealand, but the reality is, I was just going over to get a little paycheck. I'm not gonna lie. I'm not gonna lie. I went over and I played over there, and it wasn't till like I couldn't even step a front row. Like I got a lot of respect for our front rows, but. As an outside back, you should step them up every single time and beat them one-on-one. Over there, I couldn't even do that. And it wasn't until I went to kick this ball in. I used to love kicking the ball and try and smack it down the field. But it wasn't until over there I went to kick the ball, went 10 metres, and afterwards I couldn't even really walk and flew back, seen the surgeon. He said, look, you got to retire. The only operation you can do to fix it is called an osteotomy. So I'm getting an osteotomy in May. Basically, they cut my knee open, they broke my femur, put a wedge in it, and they put a plate on the inside.
Yeah.
And they realign it. And then 10 years later, I've got to get a whole new knee.
True.
So I'll be 44 with a little steel knee in my kneecap. Right. So it's been a process. And that's the thing I struggle with right now. I've always been active, but since I finished, I've been immobile. Haven't been able to move as much as I'd alike and as much as I had, put on a lot of weight, and you struggle. So I'm going to get this operation so I can just get some normality back. Like simple things. You're a father. My daughter was like, can you go on your knees and be a horse?
Yeah.
I'm like, I can't even go on my knees, darling. She's like, what? You're young. I'm like, yeah, well, I feel like I'm 60, darling. Come on. So I just want to be able to do that, just simple things with my kids.
Yeah.
Go outside and chase them around the backyard. And I said to him, one day, you'll never beat me, son. So I've still got to try and get some gas back in these legs so he can work hard till he beats me one day.
Mate, once you get that new knee, you're going to be back at it as a horse around the backyard.
Yeah, mate. I'm looking forward to getting it done. May 23rd. I'll be out for 6 months.
Yeah.
It's a long recovery. I'm on crutches for like 3 months, non-weight. But just need to get it done so I can just do normal things as a father.
Yeah.
I think that's my greatest achievement to date. Everyone asks me is, what, you know, you've achieved so much, won a World Cup, you've you know, won titles for Super Rugby and whatever. But being a father is my greatest achievement.
Doesn't compare.
Nothing compares, no. Brother. Like going home after a shit game on the rugby field, you go home and they laugh.
Yeah.
And, you know, they don't even care what went on. And you're just like, oh. If only they knew how much I'm getting sprayed by the general public out there in New Zealand, and they don't even, you know, care about anything. So it's so cool.
Did you miss footy? Did you miss it once you had to retire?
It's a question I get asked all the time. Do you miss it? I don't miss the games.
Yeah.
I don't miss going out there and watching these players today. Like you always say it. You talk to a lot of the old players that have played and they've passed on and you know, handed the baton down. It's like, I can't keep up. Well, it's true.
Yeah.
Like, the game is evolving every single day. These players, like, looking at the skills of some of these forwards, like, they're all playing like backs so they can move like backs. So I do not miss playing, particularly in Fiji. That would have been horrible playing over there. But I miss the boys, you know.
Yeah.
I just walked in then and checked out my old seat in the change room. Severn Reese has it. And,
oh.
You know, just – those are the times,
yeah.
you know, like in that change room, we're just about to go out on a nice 8-degree day in Christchurch and you're just having a laugh, the boys are playing music and, you know, you're sitting for one goal is to go down there, you're training hard and you want to get the win in the end. But for me, it was just during the week and I'm still one of those hanger-oners with the lads, you know, I still catch up with David Harvilli and Richie Moonga and a few of the boys, Mitch Drummond. Because I just like to stay involved with the lads and seeing how they're going. But, I miss just being around this room. It's quite cool to come in and brings back a lot of memories.
Hey, that's what everyone says, eh? It's not the footy. It's not the memories on the field. It's the boys and the mates that you meet along the way. It's such a cool thing.
Like everyone said, why'd you jump into the Sky Sport? I'll be completely honest. When I finished rugby, I hated rugby.
Yeah.
I was like, I want to do something else. This thing has been my life since I was 17. I want to try something different. And then I got given a Sky Sport job to go and talk about Sky and go talk about rugby on a different level. So, yeah, like I miss the boys. I still enjoy watching rugby, but yeah, I don't miss the game that much.
And you finished at Sky now, or are you still doing Sky?
Yeah, so I finished at Sky Sport. So I had 4 years post-Sky. And it was a tough decision for myself to make that decision. But when I got this radio gig, I was working every morning. And then on the weekends, like my kids are 5 and 4 now. Mm. They're playing sport. Like I'd had to fly to Auckland. And when I first started, it was awesome. You know, you go up, see your mates. You get to go watch a front row seat to the best games of rugby. But then as time got on and my kids grew and their sports become the priority on the weekend, I just had to make that decision. Mm. And it was a tough decision, but I just had to back myself and turn down the opportunity to work for Sky Sport. So the one door closes, another one opens up, and now I'm just filming the old TV show around New Zealand, trying to renovate clubs around the country with my good mate Stephen Donald. And and then soon we're about to head off to France and film another show over there. So one door closes, another one opens. That one's a little bit more lenient. Like I can go up to Auckland during the week, film it with my radio kit, so I can cover those two bases, and I still get the weekends at home.
True.
So it accommodates.
So what can you tell us about this next TV show over in France? You're on Beaver.
I'm unsure. I got an email the other day if I can share a lot about it. But me and Beaver just head over to France and just jump in a car and travel around and just see the sights.
Sure.
Yeah, it's going to be a pretty cool watch. Two absolute clowns.
Yeah.
Just traveling around and seeing a bit of the world. And it's, you know, it's fitting because the World Cup's here later in the year. And you'll get to see where the best teams in the world are going to be situated. And basically, it's got nothing to do with rugby. I'll be completely honest. It's got absolutely nothing to do with rugby. A couple of clowns just traveling around and seeing some sights.
Are you in control of the content, or how does that all work?
Well, we've got a crew, but it's basically, we've got an itinerary. Beaver's looking after one part and I'm looking after another part, and then basically we just ad lib and we just go along, and the world's our oyster. See what comes through on the content, mate. So a month away, it sounds all good. I'm gonna miss my kids.
Yeah.
Little wink there. But it should be fun.
Mate, so you are basically the new Mark Ellis, aren't you? And Beaver's Matthew Ridge.
Well, I'm not that funny. So those boys are actually quite funny, and they're very witty. So it's a hard act to follow, but we'll do our best. Just go over there and tell our wives we're working. And everyone asks the question, is your family coming? I said, no chance, mate. We might as well go for free if they're coming. should be fun.
Oh, mate, that's going to be good stuff. It's going to be a good watch, no doubt. But, mate, we haven't even got to the start of it. let's start to at the start for you. So, growing up, I don't know too much about you before I met you at New Zealand Under-19s. I always remember that. But
do you remember spraying me in that game?
Hurricanes, Crusaders.
You were winding me up, mate. I've always wanted to talk to you about that. You got under my skin so much. Oh, really irritated. Pissed me right off.
Mate, we've skipped the whole thing. We've gone straight there.
Sorry, mate. Sorry. I had to bring it. I've been waiting years to get this opportunity to talk to you about
it. This is the platform, definitely. But you know who my influence was my whole career at the Canes?
Who?
Dane
Coles and Corey Jane. Get under Dan's skin. You get them easy.
Oh. I remember that too, because do you know what? Ryan Crotty, afterwards, I think I like slapped you across the back of the head or something, and then he said, oh, get out of here, you grey-haired old man. So I was like real self-conscious about like grey hair. So I was like, oh, gutted.
Oh, you won't. You did. You got me, though. I must admit, you got me. Every time I played the Canes, I just wanted to take their heads off because they're all my best mates. And it worked every time because it took me away from playing the game.
Oh, there would have been some good memories from playing the Canes too. I remember
bad memories,
the
mate.
Bus. That one came
don't
up.
Don't bring
in,
it up.
It came up in the questions. The bus tackle.
Oh,
what do you remember about that? Obviously,
oh,
my
not
brother.
Much.
My brother. He let him.
Oh,
he let him.
Tojo. He just said touch. We're not playing touch with Ripper Rugby, Tojo.
And
come
then
on.
You've got him at full steam.
And then Robbie threw him, was tired. And I was like, come on, Robbie, cover up. And then I just got him at full steam. What I remember is I was thinking, oh, no. Here we go. Look, tackling wasn't the best part of my game. I must be completely honest. But I had to try and make an attempt. And it was the worst attempt I've ever had to make. And it wasn't just that one. He actually bumped me twice in that game. And it was a highlight reel that still to this day goes on.
Yeah.
And what makes it worse is my brother-in-law's and my sister-in-law's son constantly watches it.
Yeah.
And I'm getting irritated. I'm like, mate, you get outside. I'm going to bump you. He's only 8. Oh, wasn't my proudest moment, but anyway.
Right, it's one of those things, eh? I think it becomes on the highlights reel, hey, and every year the Hurricanes play the Crusaders, there's always a memory.
It's Sky Sport, when I was broadcasing, would play it. And
needed to be part of your contract. Delete that footage.
Stop playing it. Whoever's in the back room. But, yeah, it was good times, but Hurricanes, they always had the ball over me.
Mm.
Constantly got in my head, and I know what you're doing, mate. Know what you're doing.
Well, anyway, let's get to the start of Israel Dagg's life. Where'd you grow up? What was it like?
I had an interesting life. I grew up in I was actually born in Martin. Martin's by Whanganui there, and I've never been back. I was only there for a week.
True. Yeah, so born and gone.
Born and gone. Sore the enough. Hospital's not even there. The hospital's gone, but, you know, the stories that have been told is my family rode in on the horse, picked us up on the horse, and then rode back. We actually lived in a place called Ngā Marapuri, which is down the Waitotara Valley, Glen Osborne area.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so we grew up there for a while, and then I had a pretty disruptive life. Mum and dad, you know, break up and get back together. So there was a lot of moving around. We moved back to Hawke's Bay, parked up in the bay for a couple of years, went to school there, and then mum and dad split up and dad went to Gisborne. And then we stayed in the Hawke's Bay, and then they got back together, and then we moved to Wairoa. Sure. And dad lived in Wairoa he worked at the Freezing Works in Wairoa, and then we moved to a place called Frasertown, which is just out of Wairoa there. And then they split up again, and then Dad went to Gizzy, and then we went back to Hawke's Bay with Mum. I was the youngest brother of the family, and my youngest sister, we stayed with Mum, so I was the mama's boy hard.
Yeah.
And, they split up for a couple of years, so pretty disruptive, and then Mum and Dad got back together again.
Oh, right.
And then we all had a family back in the Hawke's Bay, and I've got a big family.
Yeah.
I've got 11 brothers and sisters.
Have you?
Yeah.
True.
Yeah, I got a big family, so 5 in the immediate family. I'm the youngest brother, I've got a youngest sister. Yeah. I've got 2 other sisters that live in Gisborne.
Yeah.
So how that happened is Mum and Dad split up, and then Dad got with another lady, Liz, and I had 2 younger sisters. Dad had young kids with this lady, Liz, and their names are Shona and Cassandra. And then apparently there's 2 other young twins that I've never met.
Really?
That I've never met that live in Dannevirke, apparently. So my sisters met them and said they look exactly like us and they're like exactly like Dad. But I've never met them. So apparently they're a part of our family. But anyway, and then they break up, Dad and this other lady with these 2 kids, and then Mum and Dad get back together. and then they got married about 6 or 7 years ago, and they lived happily until Mum passed away about 1.5 years ago. So, interesting upbringing, man.
So how come you haven't met the twins?
Oh, I don't know. That's funny. Well, Dad says it is, but they're out. They're his kids, apparently. And I've just never had an opportunity to meet them. My sister's made an effort. I've always been down here, so they live in Dannevirke, which is up in North Island, and we've never just really touched base. And they kind of haven't been a part of our family, which is sad. If they're our sisters, we love them to be a part of the family. But, they're kind of not. But hopefully we can touch base and reconnect, because they are obviously our blood and a big part of our family. So we've got a huge family, mate. 28 grandkids.
Far out.
We're a bunch of breeders. I've only got 2, so you can imagine all the breeding in the family. So Christmas is a full noise, full on, kids everywhere, cousins. It's good times. But look, we didn't have much things growing up, you know, disrupted. But one thing we had was we had love. Mm. We had support, and we had a lot of care for us as kids. We never got abused. We never got any sort of things that go on in other households. We just had a lot of moving around and moving parts, but we always maintained our love, and our parents worked extremely hard to give us all kids the best opportunity in life.
you know, mum worked 3 or 4 jobs, studied. Dad was up in the forestry, constantly grinding away. And although there was a lot of disruption, they always gave us a platform and gave us an opportunity. And we always never forget that. But it's a wonderful, it's an interesting story. And I quite like to share it because, you know, everyone has a different movie.
Mm.
And whether that's a nice movie with smooth sailing and they've got all everything they could ever dream of, whether it's on the other side where you've got nothing, you've got a lot of disruption. Like, if you believe and you dream and you work extremely hard at something that you're very passionate about, like, anything can happen. Mm. Like, you don't need all the materials. I tell a story plenty of times of not even having a rugby ball. Didn't start playing rugby until I was like 9 or 10 years of age.
Oh, true.
Yeah, I was a late bloomer because mama's boy.
What, like, couldn't afford a rugby ball?
Couldn't afford a rugby ball, couldn't afford boots. We used to use a slipper as a rugby ball out in our front yard. So my brother, he brought his new partner home and she bought some new slippers. And we grabbed their new slippers and we were playing on the front yard, kicking her brand new pink slippers through the power pole. There's a power pole standing up and there was a fence on the side and that used to be my goalpost. I'd be kicking it and then she'd come home screaming, my new slippers. We just kicked them through. So that was one of our rugby balls. Another one was just a pillowcase. Used to fill the pillowcase up with clothes and tie the end on it.
Oh yeah.
And then just get out the front yard and use that. So yeah, materials or any sort of, you know, cricket bats, just cut a piece of wood up,
yeah,
and use that, tie a bit of sellotape on the tennis ball and use that as our nut for backyard cricket. Like, that's the thing, as kids, it didn't matter what we had, we just love sport,
yeah,
and we love being outside. Changes these days, like, no kids are outside at the moment, but back then, like, we'd play test cricket with a piece of wood we found in the bush all day, and I'd be fielding all day because my brothers were bullies and they'd make me bowl all day. But yeah, it was an interesting lifestyle, but something that I'll always be grateful for, because yeah, I just had love and support, and although it was a lot of disruption like I allude to all the time, but
yeah,
you know, I just want to tell that story because anything's possible.
Yeah, so cool. Did you find all that moving hard for you to grow friendships, and like, how many times would you have moved? You sounded like 20 plus. Oh, like,
moved,
all the time.
We moved plenty, man. Yeah. It was hard, but like, we didn't need friends. I had a big family, so yeah, like, well, my brothers and sisters were kind of my mates. And
were you changing schools and stuff?
Yeah, changing schools. Like, I went to Wairau Primary, I went to Frasertown Primary, I went to Parkvale. Where else did I go?
Do they all claim you as their?
Yeah, they do. Most of them claim, but I don't mind it. I go back and,
because
my wife lives, she's from Gisborne, so we used to drive through Frasertown Primary every summer, and because we're going to Lake Waikaremoana, that's our place we get to and just get away. And Frasertown Primary is right there, and Waikaremoana was right there, and we used to stop in and say g'day, and it's amazing when you walk in there now, you're like, how small is this place?
Yeah.
Back then, you thought it was the biggest school you've ever been to, but it's actually quite tiny. So, yeah, look, I love to go back and reconnect and just give back to these schools as much as possible. Mm. It's particularly my high school, Lindisfarne College, which changed my life, yeah. I feel.
So when did you go there?
I went to Lindisfarne College in 2002, and why it changed my life, bro, I was an interesting kid growing up. Like, I had a lot of talent, but I was pretty easily distracted.
Yeah.
I was in my intermediate years. Like, I was sleeping on the street. I used to tell my mum I'd stay at my mate's house. He used to tell his mum he was staying at my house, and then we'd just go biking into town and we'd sleep at the library in Hastings there.
Why is that?
Just because we thought it was cool.
Oh, yeah.
And
what, drinking or
not? Yeah, so what we do, we'd get a $10, $10. I don't know where it came. It wasn't my house, but someone had $10, and we'd go sit outside the bottle store. And someone would go in and be like, hey, mate, can you get us a bottle? And they'll be like, hey. And then you had to keep doing that for the hour, and then someone would agree to it.
Yeah.
And they'd go in and get us a bottle of Mad Jacks. I don't know if you remember Mad Jacks, but Mad Jacks or Kentucky Gold back in those days, just a big hot bottle. It was so bad. But we'd get this bottle, $10, a bottle of whiskey, bourbon, whatever. Go back to the school and just do like nips.
Yeah.
Oh, we're idiots, man. Just thinking we were cool. And then go sleep at the library because we weren't allowed home, because that's the only way we were allowed to go out, is pretend we're staying at each other. And back then, like, phone lines were non-existent in my house. Couldn't pay the phone bill.
Yeah.
So there's no way of finding out. Just had to take our word. But we're mischievous as anything. And we went and did that and stealing, you know. Got a two-year ban from Kmart and Hastings.
Did you?
I can't believe I'm telling all this.
What did you steal?
Oh, you remember the old Simpson socks? Back in the day, like these.
Like Homer and stuff.
Yeah, like Homer, Bart Simpson, like the socks. We used to go.
Socks, geez.
Shove those down the undies and used to go hair dye. Because in the holidays, you used to dye your hair blonde, but because I was Māori and ginger, we used to go morange. So you do the old morange. Hair dye. I remember when I got caught, actually. I got caught, and that's why I got a 2-year ban. Is I got caught putting the socks in my undies. And they come up to me and they're like, we saw you stealing, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah, sorry. But they didn't even know. They didn't realise, like, underneath I had a singlet. I had a pair of shorts on. Like, I'd put all these clothes underneath my school uniform.
Yeah.
And they didn't search me. But they gave me a 2-year ban and they got the socks back. But
the
I got
Simpson
home.
Socks.
Yeah, got home and I still had a full kit under my uniform, man. Like, so that's the kind of line and track I was heading down as a young kid.
Yeah.
Just had the potential, love, you know, late bloomer in rugby, and I had an opportunity, but without a doubt, if I didn't go to Lindisfarne College, I would have continued down that journey of just stealing. You know, I would have been smoking weed, drinking, and probably would have had, not going to be ashamed, but I probably would have had 10 kids. But, you know, like, that's the kind of life I was ever heading towards. So I had an opportunity to go to private school, Lindisfarne College, in my third form year.
Was this a scholarship?
Yeah, I got a scholarship.
How did you get that? Like,
so, well, it's not education.
Stealing, drinking, sleeping in the library.
But I was a young Māori kid.
Gifted.
Yeah, I was a young Māori kid, and I had a lot of people were in that I played. I played for this Ross Shield team, Hastings East, and the railway lines in Hawke's Bay are the separation. So you got Hastings West, you got Hastings East. So on the east side, there's Hastings Intermediate. So that was my intermediate, but there was also schools like Hereworth Intermediate, which is a private intermediate, and then you know, Havelock North. Mm. So really kind of proper, prestigious kind of intermediates. And so I had a really good family-orientated team that I was amongst, but obviously I was heading in the wrong direction. So a lot of these kids went to Lindisfarne College, and they just put in the good word for me, and they kept approaching my mum and dad and saying, look, I think Izzy's got so much potential. The school would just do him wonders. The only way I could potentially, it's like $20,000 a year to go there.
True.
So it's very expensive. We didn't have $20,000 to take me there, but I got given a scholarship called the Te Whaiti Nui Atoi Scholarship to head to Lindisfarne. So I had an opportunity and I had a decision to make whether I go to school with all my best mates and go to Hastings Boys or I make the decision to go to Lindisfarne College. Only option I had to go to Lindisfarne was to be a boarder. And I lived in Hastings. So I went to this boarding school. I made that decision. I went to Lindisfarne College. I went to this boarding school. And wow-wee, was that a wake-up call for myself. Going from doing what I want to being told to get up, go pick up the rubbish, go sweep the driveways, go change all the seniors, get all the seniors' laundry, put on the laundry, go set up the dining room table. Like, it was a big wake-up call for me.
Yeah.
But it took a few years to get used to it, but without a doubt, saved my life.
Mm.
Heading to that school just saved my life because I was heading in a direction that right now I don't mind sharing, but wasn't proud.
Yeah. So why did you choose to go there? Like, it must have been a tough decision. Like, obviously,
I hated
the
it.
Easier option would have been
it.
To stay. So what was the deciding point for you? Did you just think you didn't want to go down that route you were going?
I'll be honest, I got forced.
So when you say it was your decision.
Yeah, I kind of got forced. Yeah. Mum was begging me, just give it a chance, give it a shot.
Yeah.
You know, I was leaving my best mates, they were going to this other school, and I was like, oh, okay, I'll give it a chance. So I lasted 1 year in third form at Lindisfarne College. And then at the end of the year, I was like, Started to catch up with my mates. I came back to mum. I said, mum, I want to get Hastings Boys. I'm done. You know, I've had enough. I hate boarding. You know, I ran away from the boarding house for the first 2 weeks.
Did you?
Got real bad homesickness. Yeah.
We just stay at the library.
No, I didn't go back to the library. My nan lived up the road.
Oh,
like, 200 metres. So I ran there every weekend or every night I had an opportunity.
Yeah.
ran away. So I struggled for the first year, but the second year I said, I want to go to Hastings Boys. She said, well, you got an option here. You give it one more crack, you can be day boy, or you can go to Hastings Boys and that's enough. And so she genuinely wanted me to stay there. So I said, okay, I'll stay there. But the only downside to it is mum worked at like 4:30 or 5 in the morning.
Oh, yeah.
So I had to go to school for my and the whole fourth form year at 5 a.m. And I'd just go hang out in the gym and just shoot hoops and just sit there. And I felt like I lived at that school. I was there for that long. So that was the only downside. And then I got to the end of the year. I just turned a corner and just seen the good that the school was absolutely doing for me and the reasons why I needed to stay there. And then in my fifth form year, I went back to the boarding house and stayed on and had the best 3 years of my life. And, yeah, very, very grateful that mum stayed true and Lindisfarne actually stayed true and kept the faith in me. And, yeah, and here I am today.
Mate, that's so cool. And is that when sport took over, like that sort of fifth form year? Is this when you became to start? I remember you're playing for Hawke's Bay at about 15, so mate, it must have been about this time.
Fourth form was actually the year I started making a change. I made the change in cricket, actually. I loved my cricket, playing in high school, absolutely dedicated to the sport. I used to try and whip it down there. And
you're bowling 140, eh? It's a ridiculous age. I was waiting to see it on the Black Clash, but
nah, I didn't quite see it. I'm bowling 140 back then, but I was about 38 kilos lighter, so I could move, but not these days. Fourth form, I started playing cricket. I made the first 11 in fourth form, and then I got a crack to play first 15 at fourth form as well.
So I had a
wee crack.
Fourth form's so young.
I know. But I was only allowed to play one. The coach had to go and beg my mum to play, mum said, yep, he can only play like one or two games and that's it. Like,
Did you know you were gifted or good? Or?
Honestly, everyone asks, I never had that belief. I still don't have the belief now. Like, you struggle to believe in yourself. I didn't believe until it actually happened.
Yeah.
So you get announced, you know, like, back then, you're just a kid playing the game and you love it, but reaching those heights that I was able to was just felt too far away, you know, like unachievable for me, a young kid from Hawke's Bay that, you know, grew up with the things that I've seen and been through, like, you know, how am I going to be able to achieve it? So I didn't believe it or think it was going to happen until it actually happened. So, started from a young age, just played throughout the high school and then in my seventh form year, I got a contract to play for Hawke's Bay, and that kind of made my decision up for what I wanted to do. And that's the reason I got kicked out of school early, because I didn't go to school in my seventh form year. So I got shafted early.
Because you were playing at NPC at the time.
How bad's this? Like, seventh form, my wife Daisy, she just left school and she was at EIT, but I was staying with her. We get called into a principal's meeting with the principal. My girlfriend and a student getting pulled into the principal's office, so she has to. He's trying to encourage Daisy to make sure I turn up to school.
Oh, true.
Because that was like the contract. Like, is he can play for Hawke's Bay Magpies in the seventh form, but he's still got to come to school. But,
yeah.
Man, I was training at 6 a.m. I'll finish at 8, and then I've got to go to school and listen all day, but I didn't, and then got to the end of the year, got the boot.
So when did you get together with Daisy?
Oh, young man. We've been together for 18 years.
18 years?
18 wow. years. Half my life. Met her at 16. 16, geez. Man. Like, so you met her at high school. She was, I was fifth form, and she was seventh form. So she was a little bit older than me, and met her at high school and just been together forever. And the reason I love Daisy is, like, she's been there from the start.
Yeah.
You know, she's been there from when I was getting her to drop me off, and I'd say, yep, this is my house. And then she'd drive off, and then I'd run to my actual house. So we've been together for that long, like, on the weekends. No money, but she'd take me down to the local kebab shop. We'd have, TV3 movie night, and we'd go home. She'd shout me kebabs, if we went for our 1 year anniversary at a place called Corn Exchange, and we get to the end and I'm doing the haka because I've got no cash.
And I just got to go to the toilet here, come back and she's paid the bill. Like, she's been there from the start. She's been through all the roller coasters of emotions, success, some adversity.
Yeah.
And she's given me the greatest gift I've ever had with two beautiful kids. So 18 years, mate. She knows everything, so she'll know if I'm lying on this.
Mate, that is an achievement. 18 years, that's impressive, mate.
I don't know how she stuck with this.
But then you get contracted by Hawke's Bay. You play your first NPC game at, 18, or might even have been younger, but and you look natural out there straight away. How was it? How did you feel playing that first game at such a young age?
I was nervous, man.
Yeah.
Absolutely nervous because I've gone from playing kids, teenagers, to fully grown men and playing against Counties Manukau, you know.
Was that your first game, Counties?
Yeah.
Oh, true.
Yeah, like it was a pretty rude awakening for myself, like just a young kid that loved playing the game to actually having to be fully committed. Like, I never went to the gym. That's why I still look like this, because I still don't go to the gym. Like, going from just being a kid that loved playing rugby to actually having to be a professional was a difficult transition. And then you're facing these fully grown men, and, mate, they're just so much bigger, faster, and you're just wondering, how am I going to go? So in my first year, I actually got knocked out, like, 5 or 6 times.
True.
Yeah, and those are the days where you just roll straight back in.
Yeah.
There's no, like, HIA protocols or anything like that. Like, you just, you'll be right, mate. Get up and go again next week. So I got knocked out big time. And that's Mike Anthony. He's the high performance officer for NZR. He's on the case study of why they have limited numbers, minutes for players that are playing at a young age.
Yeah, yeah.
Because of what happened to myself. Yeah, because I just got knocked out and just continued to play. And I got knocked out in a nothing game against Counties Manukau, and I actually missed playing for New Zealand Schools in my final year. So one of the hard times, and it was pretty tough. I wanted to play for New Zealand Schools with all my best mates, and I wasn't able to because I got knocked out. But anyway, things happen, and
mate, I'm surprised you never went to the gym. Like, I remember meeting you at
Why are you not surprised?
under 19s.
Yeah.
You obviously playing, I'd seen you on TV, I was 10 fullback, you were a fullback, and I remember just seeing you stroll in, and mate, your arms were bigger than my legs. I was like, man, this guy is an absolute gun. I won't be able to go for fullback, I may as well try 10. And,
that was Grant Dearns at Hawke's Bay Magpies. Like, yeah, we trained hard. Like, when I made it, that's when I started training and putting my body and going to the gym, like, every day and running and doing what's needed, because you just can't get by. Like, some of these athletes, I'm looking on the wall, mate, they're just absolute specimens. So I started late, gymming late, but you just have to commit to it and get through it and spend the money in the gym as we make your gains.
And did you start feeling more confident the more you're playing, or you sort of spoke about before you had this self-doubt all the time? Was that the whole way through, or did you start getting more confident after performances?
I don't know. That self-doubt will always be there, I feel. Look, I guess when I was younger, I probably had it less because there was no expectations, there was no pressure on me. And, you know, I'm just a young kid that's going out there to play. And no one's, you know, that's all you play like. And you just play free-willed, free-spirited, and you just want to go out there and do what you do. But it's not till you get older and you get more experience, the external pressure you put on yourself, you know, the pressure that people from the public put on you as well. So I look at pressure is probably more pressure from yourself to perform. Like, you think pressure is more than it actually is, and I think that's the kind of learning curve that I had to deal with when I got older. Like, you felt like everyone, 5 million people were watching you, judging your every single move. You drop the ball, you're thinking, what stuff article's going to be written? But that's what was going through my head, and I think that's what kind of made the self-doubt more than it actually was.
Yeah.
So I had to learn a lot. But back when I was younger, man, like, I just didn't have a care in the world. Yeah. I had no kids. I had no boobs. I was just playing rugby, getting paid, and driving around in a car. I never had a car, and doing things that I never thought I'd ever do. Yeah. So back then, I was just young and just played and really had some fun with it.
And the rise happened pretty quick for you too, eh? Like, you went from NPC to Super to All Black,
yeah,
all really quickly. So how was that rise? Obviously, Highlanders to start. A lot of people forget that you started off as a Highlander, but it's where it all started for you.
Yeah, the Landers. Look, the rise, it was an interesting one. I remember Hawke's Bay having a wee crack there, and then had a go at the under-19s, and we went over to Belfast, and then that fell into place, and then that finished, and I was thinking, man, I'm playing for Hawke's Bay again. What's going to happen next? And then I got a New Zealand Sevens.
That's right.
NZ Sevens thrown at me. And I'd a young kid thinking, all I heard about was Titch.
Yeah.
Titch, you're going to be running this. You're going to be just running all every single day. I got the call from Gordon Titchens. Hey, Izzy, Gordon Titchens here. I'm like, there you go, Titch. What do you want? Do you want to come have a crack at New Zealand Sevens? I was like, oh, yeah, okay. Went and did Sevens and absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
Absolutely loved it. The trainings were just crazy, crazy hard and tough. But, mate, what an opportunity for a young 20-year-old to travel around the world. You know, my first tournament was in Dubai. Head over to Dubai, play Sevens there, and then jump on another bird and fly to South Africa.
Yeah.
Can go to South Africa, come back, go to Hong Kong, go to Adelaide, go to United States, play in San Diego, go to Scotland, England. Like, it was just crazy. So that was a whirlwind year, but at the end of that year, I was like, I can't do this again. I cannot do this again. The only way I'm going to stop doing this again is crack Super Rugby. So I just went handy at ITM and went hard, played some nice solid rugby. I was actually in the Hurricanes region. And back then, my dream was to play for the Hurricanes.
True.
I was young, Captain Hurricane. You know, Tana Umanga, the Hurricanes bus going through the Hawke's Bay, Christian Cullen, Jonah. I was thinking, man, I want that.
Yeah.
I want that. And I was hoping and praying that I'd get picked up for the Hurricanes, but no, they chucked me in the draft.
Who did they take?
I actually don't know. Some guy, Corey Jane, probably. but you can only secure a certain amount of players in your region, and then they get thrown in the draft. So that's the reason I went down to the Highlanders. Pete Russell got an opportunity to coach down there with Glenn Moore, and I got thrown in the draft and went to the Highlanders, and absolutely loved it. Loved it. 2 years down there. I played 2009, and at the end of that year, actually, the Crusaders were chasing me, and I was so close to signing, because I wanted to go and see what this Crusaders outfit was about.
Yeah.
I didn't. I stayed loyal, and I stayed on for one more year, and then 2010, they chased again, Todd Blackadder and gave me an opportunity. The Hurricanes chased again, but I said, get out of here. You chuck me in the draft, you buggers. Nah. But yeah, went to the Crusaders and it's been here ever since, man. Yeah. 2010, I moved here. I nearly went to the Chiefs in 2013.
Yeah.
Sonny was here, Wayne Smith was here, and I was so close because I wasn't playing well here, and you know, we'd just been through so much, and I was living in a shoebox, and I just wasn't really feeling it here.
Yeah, yeah.
So I nearly made the decision. I didn't, and I'm so grateful I didn't, because this place has got a big place in my heart now.
Yeah.
I'm a Hawke's Bay, North Islander lad through and through. Never, ever thought I'd stay in Christchurch, but this is home.
Yeah.
This is home for me.
So why did you choose the Crusaders in the end? Like, what was the deciding factor there to make that move?
I just always remember watching them growing up and thinking, they're just so good.
Yeah.
They're just so good at what they do. You know, they win. They look like they just work extremely hard. And look, I'm not going to lie, they had superstars of the game playing here. So I had an opportunity to rub my shoulders with some of the best. And I thought I knew everything. I thought I was a professional. I thought, you know, I understood the game, the analysis that's involved, you know, what you need to put into your body, recovery, just what it takes to be a professional athlete. Mm. I thought I knew that. But come here, I knew nothing.
Mm.
You knew nothing, Jon Snow. So, I just had to, you know, where I wanted to get to, this was a great opportunity for me to better myself as an athlete, but better myself as a person. And that was one of the main reasons why I wanted to come out. I just want to, like you coaching, you know, like you've been the Marco, you've been Taranaki, you've been, you know, at the Hurricanes, and you're outside looking in, you're like, I really want to know. We deep down, we hate them, but I want to know why they're so good. And so that's why I wanted to get an inside look and constantly get asked why they're so good. And I won't share that secret. Until you've been a part of it, that's the reason why.
Yeah. But your time at the Landers, you got a lot of game time, which you probably wouldn't have got if you came down here earlier.
Very grateful. Very grateful for that. Like, I wouldn't have had game time like I had at other franchises. Like Hurricanes, they would have had, you know, Corey Jane was playing fullback. They had some quality wingers. Zach was there playing wing. So the game time would have been very limited. So I'm very grateful for what the Highlanders did for me. Like, they put me on the map. They put me on the map, a young kid, and I was playing every single week and getting 80 minutes. Through and through. So, like, without a doubt, very great. It was a hard decision to leave. It was a hard decision because I knew what they'd done for me as a young kid, getting an opportunity. I felt like we were close. You know, I was playing with Ben Smith. He's turned out to be not bad at all, one of the greatest ever. So, you know, we both started our career there, and I always hold the Highlanders close to my heart for the opportunities that they given me. But, mate, all my mates were at uni there. So I had to get out of there, man. It was, I wasn't a good role model. I was kind of reliving my intermediate days when I went to Dunedin, all the university shits. I went to the last ever night at Gardies. That's showing my age.
Oh, true.
That was a big night. Huge night. And it was midweek. Probably had a game that Saturday.
So was it, like, the stories are true down there. They do love their purse. They do. It is a slightly different culture, mate, to what it is here.
They love their beer. They love their booze. And I was young, so I was midweek just cruising around. Like, I told this story the other day. We're on a lad podcast, so I'll share the story.
Yes.
So we were at Gardies that night, and it was a good night. Big night. Absolutely heaving. The last night, like, that is... Everyone knows Gardies that's listening. You'll know Gardies. It's the place to go down the end of Castle Street. All the students venture upon this place and just have a hell of a night. So I was lucky enough to go last night. And we, the end of the night, we were walking outside. And I get outside and all these people start chanting, Izzy's on the purse. Izzy's on the purse. Izzy's on the purse. Izzy's on the purse. Anyway, I get on this car. I jump on this car and I start dancing and dancing and dancing and having a wee boogie. And I don't know what crossed my mind. But then I jump on the windscreen, I stomp it in.
Oh, true.
Full stomp this windscreen. So apologies if that's your car. I'm so sorry. It wasn't a student. It was this dumbass rugby player that thought he was being cool. So I apologise for that. And then Campus Wash chased me down the road and I got away.
Oh, wow.
So one of my darkest secrets I've told, mate.
Jesus.
On your car.
Wasn't expecting that.
Yeah. So I stopped this car and then...
Was this just a chant? The chant got
me. The chant got me and I got on top of me. I got fully excited. And I was like, yeah. And then I just got carried away. And so I apologise for that. But got chased down the road by Campus Watch, got away, and George and I opened my flatmate, picked me up, took me home, and rest is history.
And there's the story. No one knew. But then you move up to the Crusaders. You have a good year here. And then is it from there you make the All Blacks? Or how did your All Black call up come about?
Oh, I made it at the Highlanders, actually.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, 2010. So the end of 2010. So what had happened, 2009 is I was playing okay.
Yeah.
Playing solid rugby, but I was a bit overweight, I felt, because I got caught up in the lifestyle. So end of that year, Graham Henry actually come down, and he came down and had a chat with us and started talking to potential players. And he pulls me in and starts coming up to me, and I'm like, oh, here he is, Ted. How you going, Ted? And he comes over and he goes, you're looking a bit tubby. Full noise, straight up. And I'm like, what? And I was. If you know your skin folds, I was high, like 110.
Oh, wow.
Big boy.
Jeez.
But I was still moving. Yeah. I was still playing all right. Still the goose, so I thought everything was okay. So I didn't make it that year. And they actually took Ben Smith and Zach Ilford. And I was pretty gutted, I was pretty deflated. So the next year I came back, I just had to make better decisions. Yeah. What do I want to do? What do I want to achieve? So got my body in shape, started playing all right. and then got called up for the All Blacks at the end of 2010 in my 2010. I think I was 20, 21, and I was a young kid, so I got called up to the ABs and made the All Blacks, and I thought, oh, yes, sweet as, I'll get eased into it. But no, first team meeting, Mills Molina's injured. Israel Dagg, fullback. And I was like, oh, wow.
True.
So no easing my way into this.
Yeah.
And just got thrown in. We played Ireland.
Yeah, in the Necky too, wasn't it? That's right. Far out.
So that's how it all happened.
Did you feel comfortable or confident? Or
nah, is this you, not at all.
Shitting your pants.
Shunting, mate.
Yeah.
Like I said, I was like, yeah, I might come off the bench and test three or just ease my way into it. Yeah. Nah, fully starting, rooming with Mills, you know, and then I was nervous because I didn't want to let the team down. I didn't want to let legends down, man. Richie, Dan, and players I grew up watching, you know. High school, I had a Hotmail called Izzy Carter at hotmail.com and now I'm playing with them. Come on, like, what is this? So I just didn't want to let them down. I didn't want to let my nation down, like the
Izzy Carter
man.
That's
and
so
I,
good.
And I told him when we were sitting in the change room behind us, I said to him, mate, I said my email izzycarter@hotmail.com and he goes, are you all right? What a loser. And I was like so deflated. I was like, bro, don't be like that. That's what you meant to me. But now I really know you. Oh, I don't know why I did that. So that's kind of why I was nervous. I was just putting those expectations and nerves on myself. And just the enormity of it. Like, you're playing for the All Blacks, a team you've watched for so long. And now I'm out there doing the anthem and the haka. It was the longest week. Yeah. The longest game day ever. I was rooming with Joe Rokothoko and player I watched score four tries against Australia. Now he's next to me.
Yeah.
So it was a long day, but I was lucky. I used those nerves in the right way, and I was lucky that the game kind of went my way and had a solid little debut there. And
solid, mate. It was one of the great debuts. But it's crazy to hear that you had all this self doubt and you're like you're shitting yourself because you watch your debut from afar and you're like, man, this kid's so confident. He just playing footy. He looks so relaxed and chucking out goosies everywhere, just playing what he sees. And it definitely didn't look like you were in your head at all, like you speak about.
They just give you the tools, when you're in there. You know, like the training week's just high pressure. So you kind of get to the game, it's a breeze. And the age it helps, you know, because you're young, and although you want to do well, everyone doesn't really know if you are going to do well or not. So you don't have that pressure or you know, expectations on yourself. So I guess when you're out there and you're young, just go out there, have fun, get the ball and run. And if the first kind of play comes off or you have a little bit of gold in that first movement, I feel like I'm one of those players.
Confidence.
So you got under my skin early, so it's going to be a long day. Whereas if I got off to a flyer, come stay with me now because I'm going to go handy.
Oh, so that's what CJ told me.
Here you go. That's what CJ told me. So if you're playing golf with me, get under my skin. If I shank it, it's going to be a long day.
That's so good. But your All Black career wasn't just your debut. It was the next few tests as well against South Africa, a couple that I remember where you scored a couple of unreal tries. One, I think at Westpac, where you throw out a big goosey on Pierce Spies and break about five tackles and score.
Bro, if you watch that clip, you watch me and watch me running around, I had no idea. I had no idea where I wanted to be, where I was going. Like, I was playing wing.
Oh, true.
So I was meant to go on for Mills, and Mills go to wing and I go to fullback.
Oh, yeah.
But I said, nah, I'll just jump on the wing. Didn't even train there all week.
Yeah.
Didn't even know. And so if you watch that clip, I was in no man's land. But I guess, wing's pretty similar to fullback. You're kind of just roaming around and getting yourselves into positions. Oh, that was just fluky. Turn us. Just grab the ball, have a goosey. Like, I don't know how they fell for it because I dummy cut Owen Franks. No disrespect, Franksy, but I was never giving you the ball. You know what I mean? It just happened. It came off, and that was a cool way to start my first try in the black jersey. And and got it done, and then I was an idiot later in the year and I nearly ran dead. I'm constantly being reminded of that, eh?
Yeah, it comes up a lot, eh?
It does.
Seeing clips everywhere on socials about you talking about
that. Oh, someone the other day said, I watched that clip when you nearly went, and he stumbled. I said, dead. And he goes, yeah. And I was like, oh, yeah, mate. I just like to keep you on your toes, you know? Keep you guessing.
Was it just that? You were just...
Nah.
So...
I was young.
Yeah, and what, didn't think about the dead ball line or... Oh, it was a hell of a try, eh?
I did nothing, really. Marv did all the work, and I just finished it off.
The moment, the occasion of it, eh, was...
98,000 people.
Scores were locked, 22-all.
Yeah.
98,000.
And I was 21.
You're in the South clear. Africa. You know you're scoring so from about 22 out.
Let's go. It's going to be a good night. Now, I don't know why I did it. Look, it could have been a hard lesson learnt.
You know, imagine, have you thought about it?
Yeah, man. Like, imagine being the mug that cost the All Blacks the game, and you know they could have had a try and put the ball down. Like it happened to Rico a couple of years ago in Wellington. Like, it can go the other way. So I always tell the story now. Like, carry the ball in two hands, put the ball down. Do not celebrate before the try. I got a real growling for that. I got ripped to shreds. Mills actually said to me, well, don't celebrate ever again. I didn't even know what he was on about. I was
like,
what do you mean? So I do think of it on the other side, like, if I had went dead, what would have happened?
Yeah, wow.
I would have been a class clown instead of a hero. So.
How close were you?
I was probably, like, I don't know, 15 centimetres.
So you genuinely feel like you potentially could have been dead.
I could have been dead.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I actually got caught up in the moment, like the 98,000 people, I'm like looking around, ding, and then I'm like, oh, well, I better put
small angles.
And then I dived, and then I was like, I should have dived like on my arms, but I put one arm out just to keep it even closer. And it just about did go out and dead, but rest is history, we had a good night.
Yeah. It was a good night, I bet. And did the coaches hit you up?
Oh, yeah, I got sprayed, man.
Oh, did they?
Sprayed in the changing rooms plenty because I was sitting there in typical Corey Jane fashion. We're having a laugh, having a wee giggle, and then Steve Henson comes and taps me on the shoulder. He's like, how you going, cock? I was like, oh, good. How are you? He goes, don't you ever celebrate before you put the ball down again. Don't ever do it. Rip me to shreds. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then he walked off, and then I was like, to CJ, I was like, doesn't he know I just won us the game?
Scored the match winner.
Like, I was like pumping my chest, like having a real laugh. And then CJ gets up, tells the coach that I said that. And then he looks around and gives me the eye. And yeah, I got sprayed again.
CJ.
But all the senior boys sprayed me. Steve Anson sprayed me. And yeah, a lesson learned. Could have went the other way. So CJ, don't
share your secrets. Oh,
thinks he's rude. He is very witty. I must give him that.
Yeah,
mate, just don't tell him anything. Big mouth. Oh, waha.
Mate, and then the next year, massive year for the country, Rugby World Cup year. Were you confident you were going to make that squad on the form you were playing?
I wasn't confident. But like, I actually tore my quad off my hip that year.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, so I was over in South Africa and we're playing against the Stormers in Cape Town. And I kicked the ball. And when I kicked it, I just heard this like ping.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I do remember that.
And I kicked it. And then what happened is I tore my abductor off my hip and it just like flapped down and it was at the bottom of my knee.
Was this the year you guys travelled everywhere?
Yeah, that was earthquake year. We were travelling every week. So I did that. I tore my abductor off my hip. I had to come back. And this was like, I think this was about May. So I had 3-4 months to get back and get my self back sorted. So after that, I was like, nah, I'm no chance. I've got to go get surgery. So they had to pull my my abductor up and reattach it and get it going. And then I had 20 minutes of club. And then I had 40 minutes of NPC. And then I had one test match to make the World Cup. So I had three opportunities, and look, I'll be completely honest. In that time, I was living in Christchurch alone because the team was travelling every week.
Mm.
So I didn't like when in terms of preparation and getting yourself back to where you need to be, I wasn't giving myself many opportunities and a solid chance. But some sort of miracle happened. I got back. I got fit really quick. and I got myself into shape, and I got three opportunities, and I played against Havelock North and Napier for the Pirates, and we won the Madison Trophy. There was a bit of a dilemma there because I came back and just played in the final.
Oh, true.
And we actually won it. So it was like I claimed to fame. I won the Madison Trophy there in the Bay. And then I had an opportunity to go play against Bay of Plenty for Hawke's Bay,
yeah.
40 minutes with Zach. We won that game and had another opportunity to fly to South Africa. And we played South Africa in Port Elizabeth. And we actually lost that game, but I actually went okay, and yeah. I actually played some solid rugby. Then they named the team after that, and I obviously did enough in that last game to warrant selection for the All Blacks. So I didn't think I'd crack it, no doubt. With injuries, you know, limited opportunity to play any rugby, I thought, nah, it'd be a long shot.
Yeah.
I obviously did enough, and got the job and then got an opportunity to play in that World Cup at home, which was amazing, man. Yeah. I'll never, ever forget. That was 8 weeks of intense pressure.
Yeah.
I know you want to try and bring up that moment, eh?
Mate, I always ask the questions. You spoke about the questions before. Like 90% of the questions are about what actually happened that night.
Oh.
I guess it's something you live with.
It's something I get asked all the time,
yeah.
And it's something I have to live with, and it's something I'm very ashamed of, because Mills Mulaney, that was his week, this was his 100th test.
Oh yeah,
he was playing his 100th test for his country, and selfish Israel and Corey Jane just thought would take it all away from him and take the spotlight away from him. So I'm not proud of that. At one, but it was a tough time, and I'm glad I didn't have kids. And my kids will probably read about it one day and listen to this podcast about what went on. Look, we were just young, and no, there's no excuse. We knew the right from wrong,
yeah,
and we made a bad decision. We were in the massage, and those are the days where sleeping pills were very accessible.
Yeah,
we took a couple of sleeping pills and. We're on the massage table, and the reason you take them because you just go into la la land, and you feel like, you know, we're always tracing an adrenaline rush, and that was our adrenaline rush.
Yeah.
Took the sleeping pills, and then we had to go out for dinner. So me and Corey and Zach went out for a feed. Three amigos, the trio they used to call us, and then it just went blank, and I can't remember anything. And then all I remember waking up. Is next to Corey Jane and looking over and going, Corey Jane, what are you doing in my bed? And we're like Marae living styles. We had mattresses all on the floor, and Pity Weeper was my roomie. And I was like, what are you up to? He's like, oh, I don't know. That was a mean sleep, eh? And I was like, oh, I'm feeling a bit unwell. I look up and Pity goes, you idiots. And we're like, what? He didn't say anything.
Yeah.
And then we went down to breakfast, and I was like, oh, man, I'm feeling sick. I can't eat. And he's like, bro, you must have caught a bug. Not knowing what had gone on the night before. And then I was like, oh, well. Went to the gym, bro, and I was pale white. And I couldn't train. I was feeling so crook, and I was just the worst gym ever. I wasn't playing. Corey was playing on the wing. So he was sweet as. He pumped through it, and I didn't. We get back to the hotel, and Darren Chan, the All Blacks manager, is walking in the lounge, walking through the foyer, and he knocks us on the shoulder, and he's like, come in here. We're like, oh, what's going on here? What have we, you know, what's happened?
Mm.
Not knowing. 100% not knowing what have we done.
Did you have any idea?
No clue.
What was your last memory? Was it the dinner?
Being at the dinner. Falling off my seat.
Falling off your seat.
That's it. Straight up, and they can't remember a thing.
True.
And then we walk in, and he's like, mate, you didn't pay for your taxi last night. We're like, taxi? What taxi do we? Oh, I can't even remember a taxi. He's like, yeah, you didn't pay for your taxi. The hotel's fixed it up, so just make sure you head up and pay for it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, sweet ass. Nice. We'll go back to the room. Next minute, knock on the door. Media manager, Joe Locke. Sup, Joey? Come in, brother. He's like, what have you idiots been doing? We're like, what? And he was like, mate, there's photos, there's footage, there's everything of you boys in town in Takapuna. At the Max Brewery Bar, behind the bar, one Jandawan, dart in the air, serving beers behind the bar. And we're like, hey, I do not remember a bar.
Yeah.
One, but, and, yeah, so we went to this bar. We were behind the bar, can't remember. And then there was photos of that. And then Oh, there was just a lot of time there that just went blank. Can't really remember. And woke up the next day and that all came out, that Corey Jane and Israel Dagg were in town, absolutely hammered, and can't remember any of it, and keep getting repeated. And the worst thing about it is I'm not proud of this, and it seems like an occurring theme, but I was like, where's my car? And I was like, car? It's not outside. So I walked down the bar, car's there, keys in it, windows down, so I'd driven there.
Oh,
in the car.
True.
Yeah, bro. So could have absolutely killed someone, man. So dumb. So dumb. Yeah, not something I'm proud of. Feel embarrassed actually talking about it.
Yeah.
Never really shared this story, but it was a learning curve for me, and you know, just had to really grow up. And the worst thing about it is my wife was like, come out for dinner with us tonight, hun. And I was like, nah, I'm just going to prepare for the quarterfinal, World Cup quarterfinal this week. I said, nah, I'll just chill. Well, I had to come clean straight away because it was front pages the next day. So I let her down, lied to her, and said I was doing something different, but I didn't. And, there was a quarterfinal World Cup. Next week, got absolutely sprayed, made to feel about this little in front of the team. Richie, Brad Thorne, Kevin Mialamu, pretty much nearly knocked our blocks off.
Yeah. Did you have to go... What, sit down with the leadership group, or how did it work?
Like, so back then Wayne Smith wanted us gone, but
out of the team.
Wanted us gone out of the team, but because it was World Cup, you can't bring people in and out.
Oh wow!
So yeah,
saved by technicality.
He was stuck with us, bro. Otherwise, gone. Israel Dagg, World Cup winner, no chance.
Yeah.
I would have been out the back door, but he couldn't. So we had to stay in, and we had to cop it. We got just ripped to shreds. For the whole start of the next week, we were playing Australia in the semi-final. And then I would never have played the World Cup anymore if it wasn't for Mills getting injured in his 100th game. He broke his, I think it was hand or shoulder, something happened. And he got injured. So I got an opportunity to play against Australia. And the only way you repay the faith for your teammates is playing well. I was under so much pressure, man. Mm-hmm. So much pressure. And me and Corey Jane... had our best game that weekend against Australia.
Yeah.
So repaid the faith, but it was a hard week, man. Hardest week I've ever had in footy, because I knew I'd just done wrong.
Yeah.
And I felt that big. But only week. And after the game, Wayne Smith walks in, and we just carved up or played well, and we beat Australia, probably my most clinical game I've ever played at rugby, and he just picks up a power aid and throws it at me. He says, drink it. And then after the final, he's like, you're lucky you played well. So Smithy, it wasn't – I felt bad because I let Smithy down. It's a guy that's done so much for me.
Mm.
But, not a proud moment. There's, you know, a lot of blankness there.
Yeah. Mate, it's scary that you can take a couple of pills like that and then just go into some mode which you cannot remember. You don't even –
I can't remember being at a bar.
Yeah.
Behind a bar. But they had all the footage and all the.
Have you seen the footage? Or have you seen some stuff from the night and been like,
yeah,
I've seen what?
And I've met people down the road and they were in the bar and they were like, they said they were talking to me.
Yeah.
And they were like, you made no sense.
Oh, true.
And you were just blank. And I was like, oh my God, that's so embarrassing. So, yeah, lessons learnt. Some errors I've made along my journey and I'm not proud of, but you got to get through them and get through a bit of adversity and yeah.
But was sleeping pills and tramadols and all that big part of...
It's a big part of rugby, man.
Yeah.
It was a big part of rugby because, you're stuck in these hotels. There's no excuse, but there's a lot of external pressure that's put on you. So for us, it was a legal way of getting away, from it all.
Yeah.
We abused it, no doubt, and it was. They've cracked down on it now, which was needed because it was, the lads were abusing it and using them for the wrong way. And, you know, simple things of some guys wouldn't take them, so you'd be like, can we have them? Yeah, okay. And then, oh, gosh, don't get me a couple. Don't tell them for me. You know, just silly boy things, man.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, not proud of it. And, I'm always going to say it because it's something that I'm quite embarrassed about.
Yeah.
As a father now, you know?
Yeah.
You kind of think, imagine if your kids or you knew your kids were doing that. Mm. And I'll show them that clipping one day and say, don't you do this. You will not learn the hard way. Yeah. Don't learn from me.
But you've come out quite recently around you suffering with depression.
Yeah.
And was that all part of it? Like, was the sleeping pills, was that all part of the escape? Or when did you start noticing you had depression or you were suffering with mental health?
It wasn't until I finished, eh? Like,
oh, true.
Just going, well, that's when I really noticed, because I just wasn't motivated and I didn't want to get out of bed. And I was wondering why I just wasn't feeling happy.
Yeah.
Because on the outside looking in, I had everything I could ever dream of.
Mm.
But on the inside, I couldn't find that one thing that could make me happy. You know, getting up and seeing my kids wasn't making me happy. And I guess it just stems from just kind of understanding my purpose now.
Mm.
You know, Timmy B. Bateman spoke about the other day, like your identity. And for me, rugby was my everything.
Mm.
And that's all I knew and that's all I thought I was. And it was. And when you finish, that's all taken away. And you're like, okay, what now? What do I do now? So it was kind of, which is hard for me to fathom, because I had a job at Sky Sport and I was still on the screens. But I just felt like I didn't have a purpose and an understanding and a real reality of who I am.
Yeah.
And who I am as a person and my identity. And I'm still working on it. I still have so much self-doubt in myself. Like,
yeah.
It's because I'm in an industry now where it's kind of you are getting judged with everything you do anyway.
Yeah.
You know, I was getting judged on TV when the way I was broadcasting. Like, yeah. I've got the most fluent accent, or I don't have the biggest vocabulary there to get me through. And I felt like I was getting judged for that.
Yeah.
The way I was calling games, I'm getting judged. Now I'm hosting a radio show. And if things don't come out the right way, you've been seen as like you're dumb.
Yeah,
And you don't even know how to speak. So there's still a little bit of that anxiety that goes through me on a daily. But I'm in a better place.
Mm.
I'm in a better place. And I think the thing that needs to work for me is I need to be active. I've been dealing with weight problems since I finished rugby, and it's hard.
Mm.
Like, I go and see people now, and they're like, "Jeez, you're put on the beef." And I can take it, but I'm like, man, if you say that to the wrong person, like, could go pretty pear-shaped.
I feel like they say that to anyone. Like, you go either way. Like,
well, you haven't.
Mate. I've gone skinny. Everyone says, "Jeez, you've lost weight. Where's all your muscles gone?" And you look at Kieran Reid. I know he gets it as well. Richie, these guys who go the skinnier side. But
you know, one thing I've noticed.
What?
Fords go the other way. Backs go the other way, man. We've always been skinny our whole careers. When we finish, we're like. When they had to maintain the bulk, they go the other way. What is that? True, eh?
It is, except for me. Like, yeah. I was always trying to bulk, and like once I've stopped, I'm like, this guy's so skinny. But, that's all part of it.
But it is like, it's a hard one. Like, you look good, you feel good about yourself, you're going to have nice self-esteem and you're going to feel good. So for me, it's just trying to find that balance and put goodness in my body and maintain a physical lifestyle, because it's something I've done forever. And when that's taken away from you, it's hard.
Yeah. So how did you handle injuries and stuff throughout your career, you know, when that has been taken away from you for sort of six-month periods instead of, you know, the end?
Oh, look, it was difficult because you always wanted to play. But I tell the story now to players that are suffering long-term injuries is like, mate, it's a paid sabbatical. You know, you got to look at that longevity in the game. You're never going to get these opportunities to have 3 or 4 months off because you constantly just played, mate.
Yeah.
You never get a paid leave. So this is an opportunity for you to better yourself. So for me, when I had those forced breaks, I just made the most of it. I got away and I had, you know, I just really took a step away from the game because it's so in your face, this game, from week to week, and it's, you live and breathe it, so it's quite hard to have that balance. But when you get injured, go away, find some balance, give you a good opportunity to plan for the future, whatever it is, maybe do some travelling, because there'll be a window. It's all part of the plan, return to play plan. There'll be a window for you to train extremely hard. So you might have like a month or two window there where you can just get away and relax. So do that, work extremely hard. And, mate, there's no better opportunity where you are getting paid to train and to train as hard as much as you want and come back a better person and a better player. And that's the way I looked at it.
Yeah.
Is, mate, I've got 4 months here. Imagine if I can just work extremely hard in those 4 months, what I can be. And that's what I did in 2015. I got injured. I got dislocated my shoulder for Hawke's Bay. I'd just got dropped from the All Blacks for the World Cup. So, you know, I was already lacking confidence, but I got injured. I had 6 months out of the game. I went to America, didn't watch one bit of rugby for a month and a half, 2 months. I came back. I had a four-month window. Me and Neil Tucker and John Roach and Simon Thomas, the old Crusaders trainer, we just trained, bro. Trained the hardest I've ever had to train. When I came back, bro, I was like, why didn't I do this in preseason?
Yeah.
Every preseason I'd come back and I'd have to start from square one because, you know, you might have just cruised through summer. You just had a huge year. But I came back after that. I was fit. I was in the game. I had more touches than I've ever had, back-to-back touches. And it just, rugby was easy.
Yeah.
Instead of having to scrape your bum around that whole field for the first half of the year because you just hadn't done the work. So I say to players, like, if you have a long-term injury, it's a great opportunity to find that balance, but come back absolutely hissing.
Yeah, it's hard for kids to understand that, eh? But if you think about it now, imagine getting paid that coin to just train, fully train your body for 4 months. I'd be like, man, I'd take that any day.
Didn't have any abs still, mate. So I never had abs my whole career. So I was, you know, had mud guts dag, but, mate, came back fit as a fiddle and just, everything flourishing. I made the team again, man. Like, my proudest moment is being dealt that hand of I was playing poorly. I actually didn't deserve a chance to play in that 2015 World Cup. I was hopeless that year. And it was a struggle. And I got dropped. And I nearly quit. I actually nearly quit the game. And
what, nearly fully quit
rugby?
Yeah,
I said to Daisy, retire? Enough. Yeah. True. I said, I'm done. This sucks. Like, I'm sick of walking down the street looking at someone. And these are what's going through my mind. It's like, oh, he's like, he's looking at me like, oh, there's that Israel Dagg, useless guy got dropped from the All Black. Like, that's what was going through my mind. I was like, I'm done with that. I'm sick of that. I am more than rugby, and I just want to live a normal life.
Mm.
And then she was like, no, calm down, just relax. You know, we'll just get to the end of the year. We'll go to America. We'll just chill. We'll have a holiday, and we'll just get away from it all and just relax. So it wasn't for her. Yeah, I would have finished, but proudest moment. I dug deep, and I came back, and I just flourished, man, and everything started falling in place. And what had happened is I put, like, that pressure I talk about, I put it all on me, and I felt like I was playing for 5 million people and trying to impress 5 million people. And I had the weight of New Zealand on my shoulders. So when I got injured and when I went away, I just came back and I was like, nah, I don't play for them. Yes, I do want to make them proud and happy, but the reason I play the game is for my mum, my dad, you know, my wife and my kid to be, because my wife got pregnant that year with my son Arlo. So that really brought it home as, okay, this is my why, and this is why I do the things. And when I make a mistake, my why, they won't have that expectation or pressure. They won't judge me for making that mistake or dropping the ball. So that pressure that I thought I had on me was irrelevant. And, yeah, that year just flourished. I made the All Blacks again and had probably the best year I've ever had in the jersey. And things, panned out and the rest is history.
Hey, it's crazy. It's crazy to hear that you potentially we could have missed out on those glory years. Cause
I would have ended with no title, mate. Oh, imagine that.
True. So what year did you win the title?
2017. True. Yeah, won my first title in 2017 with Razor and
Was that your last year of Super?
Nah, 2019 was my last year. Yeah. So, but 2018 I was food bull. Food bull, and then I went to South Africa in 2018. Japan, sorry.
Yeah.
And I came back in 2019. I retired, but I was still contracted.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And I was still part of the team, but I claim one.
You got three rings.
I got three, but Corey Jane always says you only played in one. So, I'll claim two.
Yeah, no, fair enough. And that first one, what one was that?
South Africa.
Oh, the Joburg, best one, like, apparently. Yeah,
that was the best title. Oh, Probably one of the best things I've done apart from the world. Like, that is a special to head to South Africa. And the worst funny thing about that is Ray's actually knew that was going to happen. Mm. Like, our theme was themed in a way that we were going to South Africa and we were going to go to the jungle and we were going to go win this title. And it all happened, and we went over there and we won it. And, man, it was an awesome moment. First title, you never ever forget that.
Yeah.
Winning that title. You won that in 2016, eh?
16. 2016,
yeah.
16, yeah.
Such a special time, bro. Right,
crazy.
So, you know, lifting that trophy. I was actually quite happy when we lost in 2015. Because I didn't want to deal with Corey Jane.
But that was an unreal game too, eh? Because you guys had a decent lead, or they had a red card, and then they started coming home. They came home pretty hard. You had to hang on there in those last few minutes.
I went off after 50, so I can't really claim it. My knee, bro. My knee is so bad. But it started jamming up. I had to get taken off. 50 minutes, yeah, and we hugged deep. And they made a little comeback towards the end. But, you know, Sam, who was it? I think it Matt Toddle. Someone got a turnover in the end. And Richie Moana kicked it out. And, mate, it was, cool moment. Like, it's because you're in the middle of nowhere. You're surrounded by, you know, your enemies, and you're just in this cauldron, and you get the game done. And then that night, that rest of those days, we didn't fly out for another day.
Yeah.
Oh, it was a special time to get, you know, pretty tight with the lads.
And Monte Cassino, was it?
Yeah, Monte Cassino, a bit of everywhere. And then just for our flight, they came back with some KFC.
Oh, that's right.
Feed the boys up. We can't let them get in on the plane with an empty tummy and just drink the whole way home. I actually came out and woke up in Sydney. It was a good trip. Great trip. But I'll never forget. 2017, so good.
Oh, mate. So did you ever think about going overseas? I know you went to Japan, but was there ever an option for you to head over earlier or head to Europe or anywhere?
I had a few opportunities. So 2016. So 2015 when I obviously missed the World Cup.
I was thinking,
if I'm going to play, I might as well try and plan for the future.
Go somewhere else.
And have a wee look overseas. So there was an opportunity to go to Toulon. That was kind of humming and hawing. There was an opportunity to go to Japan and play at Canon again, which is where I ended up in 2018 anyway. But there was a genuine opportunity to go to Leinster. Over in Dublin. So I actually caught up with Leinster when we went there at the end of 2016. We played Ireland over in Dublin, and I went and caught up with Ethan Athewa and all the coaching staff there and had a wee look around. And, yeah, that was probably a real genuine opportunity and genuine chance for me to head over. And I was humming and hurrying, but I just got back in the All Blacks. I was starting in the wing. I was playing well. And my contract had a lot of what-ifs in it. Mm. If I did this, if I did that, you know, if I did this, you get this. So I said, this is what I'm going to got offered to go to Leinster. If you want me to stay, I'm happy, I want to stay. I want guarantee at all. So Steve Hansen, you know, butter him up. Steve went over and spoke to them all and obviously got it all guaranteed. So I stayed here, and then Funny it happens, where the world goes, was James Lowe actually went to Leinster.
Oh, I took your contract.
Took my contract and went over there, and now look at James Lowe. So they're so happy over there, because he's a way better buyer for Leinster and Ireland rugby at the moment, with James Lowe, what he's been doing. So,
oh, true.
Yeah, I didn't end up going, and I came back here and ruined my knee in pre-season against the Hurricanes in Levin, I think, or somewhere. I don't know.
So it was a moment. It wasn't just wear and tear. It was actually a moment. It was a moment. Oh, man. True.
That's why I can't understand these preseason games. We play them in these paddocks.
Mm.
You know, we're high performing athletes, and we go around, and I was playing in this paddock, bro, and I stood in a pothole.
And I hyperextended
my knee, and that was the downward spiral. And that's what I did in 2017, playing a preseason in Levin or somewhere for the against the Hurricanes. I did it then, and after that, I just went, and it was downward spiral, man. Yeah,
hey, that's crazy.
I try and talk about it because these pre-seasons are important, but maybe just get the games where the fields are top notch and, you know, you're not putting your body through hell. But, yeah, that's where it happened, and, we know what we're at now. That was a downward spiral. That's kickstart. I've always had knock knee. I've always had a bad knee, but that little moment where I stood in the pothole just kind of accelerated the wear and tear and and left me to where I'm at today. So a lot crazy. Of what ifs going through my head, as you can tell.
Yeah.
And what if I didn't do that? I might be still running around with Sam Whitelock. No chance.
Mate, you could be. You could be. But then you do go to Japan, and it was just with a dodgy knee. So you already had a dodgy knee, but they signed you anyway. You got part. You snuck past the medical.
I told them. I said, look, I've got a pretty bad knee. And Alistair Kutsia, the old South African coach, was their coach.
Yeah.
And I went over there, bro, and I was like, I don't train. I just like, if you want me to play, bro, I just got to have real managed trainings and get through it. So, yeah, I didn't play a hell of a lot and trained reasonable, but we were doing watt bikes and rowing, so I'd rather be training. But didn't play a hell of a lot there, played probably 4 games. I was there for like 3 or 4 months. Hell of an experience. What an amazing country that is.
Mm.
So it was cool experience. My daughter was like 3 months. My son was, a year and a bit.
Yeah.
And so we flew over as a young family, had a hell of a time. The rugby just wasn't meant to be. And then I played that last game against Panasonic. It was actually Matt Todd's team, Ash Dixon's team, and we got pumped and I got smoked. I got stood up defensively again, got beaten, and I went to kick that ball and couldn't kick it, and then I just left that game. I said, I've got to go back to New Zealand.
Yeah,
my knee is not good, I can't continue on. Went back to New Zealand, seen Bruce Twaddle, Andrew Vincent, the surgeons, and they just said, look, you can't fix it. Only way we can fix it is osteotomy. We've got a break leg. You cannot play again. And so I just got told I wasn't able to play rugby again and forced to retire.
Mate.
At 30 years of age.
30, yeah, 30. True. So, and that's when the sort of downhill spiral happened of who am I?
Yeah.
Got to find yourself.
Well, it's just like you got to earn. You got to get to work again. And yeah, I was just lucky that Sky had. I actually reached out to Sky and just said, look, I've not playing much now, if there's any opportunity to come do some work, I'll be keen. And that's how it all kick-started. And then they offered me a contract for two years, and then that happened. Then they offered me another contract for another year, and then went to renegotiate, and a few things went on. I just said, oh, nah, it's not for me, so I'll just move on. So, yeah, Dallas Sparrow, here I am now.
We have gone to our questions. We've gone to Instagram. Plenty of questions have come in for you. Obviously, a lot of them were about that Rugby World Cup incident. Man, what a story that was. Jeez, it's blowing my mind. But the next few, there's some good ones in here too. First question, can you bring back the Sea City Brothers?
Oh,
bring them back.
Don't get me started. I can't believe I did that. I cannot believe it. Look, we raised some money for Child Cancer Foundation. That's what it was all about. But I got coerced into that by our manager, Dan Carter. Uh-huh. And I can understand what he was doing.
Yeah.
He didn't have one bit of input, didn't put his face on this team. So no one knows that Dan Carter was our actual manager of Sea City Brothers. So no, I will not be making a comeback.
Imagine them back on tour. It'd be awesome. I mentioned it to Willie Hines the other day. He was so gutted. Didn't really.
They called us the Bald Brothers because we're all losing our hair. So we're the Bald City Brothers. Oh my. Oh, Willie Hines, he's still bald. But no chance. I'll never do that.
But you did do the Air New Zealand video, so that was a big moment for you, eh? Like, that was sort of when the World Cup was on, stardom.
Oh, you've brought it back now. You brought it up. So that was at the time of the 2015 World Cup. So we'd just done
what the campaign. What was it, 2015?
We'd just done the campaign.
It was 11.
For MIB. we're going to the World Cup. Yeah, let's go. And, well, Israel Dagg's not on that plane.
True. So I was, it was 11 or 15, bro. Oh,
it was
wow.
So embarrassing. Did that whole campaign. It was all good. I got heaps of flights and got paid for it, obviously. But but the worst thing was, I wasn't on that main flight when the team was flying to England.
True.
I was stuck at home licking my lips and licking my wounds saying, oh, I wish I was there. But so that was embarrassing. But it was good. It was good, man. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And
did you write your lyrics?
Nah. They brought choreographers down to Christchurch.
Oh,
I had to full do like the Men in Black dance. I can't remember it one, but it's quite a good party. A party thing, I go to parties and people chuck on Men in Black, and I have to rap.
sit back, relax, let's go, let's get this started. But before all this plane's departed, obey instructions from your crew. All out of times and placards to loose items, your ball on board must be secured and safely stowed. Under the locker up ahead, under the locker overhead, or underneath the seat instead. Yeah, this right here's a seatbelt sign, so buckle up if it could shine. Bounce clips low across your hips, just make it fits into it. That's something like that.
Oh, mate, I do love a bit of live music. Mate, had Elijah Taylor rapping the other day, but I think you might have even topped him.
Nah, he's a good freestyle. I watched that one.
I
watched that one. But, yeah, embarrassing. And the worst thing is they ask you to do it on the flight.
I'd
get on and I'd be like, nah. But hey, do you want to do it live? And I'm like, no chance. You're all right, play the video. embarrassing. Things I do, eh?
You're a yes man, though, eh? You're always saying yes to things.
I said yes to this. There you go. Yeah, what a land. Let's go.
There he is, the legend himself. Okay, next one. Oh, you mentioned it around the Sea City brothers all balding, but what is the secret to growing my hair back? Someone's asked, and talk me through this whole journey.
Yeah, so I've started a company called Identity.
Saw that.
So obviously Identity, initials ID, it's just trying to help people find their identity back. I know what it's like to lose your hair. It absolutely sucks. So just offering the opportunity out there that there are options to get it done, and going bald is okay. But everyone thinks there'll be this magic formula out there, this potion that you can take and you'll have your hair back. Well, there isn't, and the only way you can get your hair back is hair transplant. I had it done about 5 years ago, and basically I had the FUE, which is they take a strip of your hair at the back. They individually take each strand of hair. They call them grafts, and the graft might have 1, 2, 3, or 4 hairs in it. Depending on how healthy they are, and then they put these grafts back in your balding spots, your areas. They do it in a way so it's not just planted. They actually have to look at the shape, the flow. So a guy called Vikram and his team will actually plant them in, and basically these grafts, because it's your tissue, 95% of your tissue will always reattach. And then these hairs, over a 9-month journey, just grow back like normal hair. And you're at a stage now where you've got a full crop, and the rest is history, and I've never thought I could ever have a fringe in my life.
Yeah.
Now I've got a fringe, and I can shape it, I can mold it, I can do whatever, and everyone asks me, like, what is it? I'm like, it's your own hair.
Yeah.
It's your hair, and they take the hair from the back of your head. If you look at everyone that is going bald, apart from Willie Hines, because he shaves it off, they've got hair around the back of the head. So that is the healthiest hair on your body. And it's just like geography. You're taking the hair from the back and you're putting it in the balding spots, and it'll grow back forever.
Geography. You're like, yeah. I actually remember, like, I think you just had your
You ripped me out again.
You just had your transplant against I was playing in Japan, and you just had it, and you were stoked. I remember seeing your face like when we were shaking hands after the game, and you're just so stoked with your new hair, and I was like, oh, that's cool.
Got it done. It's quite cool to watch that journey. Like, you see it from being fully bald, and then you, like, going through that, because I just got it done, I went to Japan.
Yeah.
And you can see, like, little fluffs coming through, little fluffs. And then the best moment in my life was I used to grow the hair from the back forward and comb it forward.
Yeah.
I cut those bits off because the hair had grown, and I had, you know, my crop back. So,
yeah.
Oh, something I'm proud of doing. And I think the more we normalize it, the better. Like I said, going bald is okay, but there's a solution there, there's an option there, and you should be open about going down. I'm currently talking to people and they're just so embarrassed, they don't want people to know. I'm like, mate, well, you're going to shave it off, and, you know, that's okay, but why not just go through this, get it done? And I've got a big scar on the back of my head, so FUE is that surgery that I got done, but there's actually another option where I it's called FUI, so they individually take the hairs out off the back of your head. It's like an apple core. They put it in, they pull out the grafts.
Oh, true.
And it doesn't leave a scar.
Yeah.
And they do it in a way so when the hair grows back, it's, you don't even notice. It's just spread out across the back of your head, and you don't have the big scar across your back of your head. So
true.
If I shave it short, you'd be like, wow, who hit Izzy with an axe?
Yeah.
Because there's like this big scar. But
But you got hair, you're not going bald, you're not shaving it off.
Mate, if you're behind me, you're no good to me. So front on, I look good, you know.
For the TV, mate, you're ready.
There you go. Look, and I always said when I was bald, I said, that's all that matters, you know. Yeah. As long as that's okay. Well, that's okay now, so we're good.
Oh, that's good. Well, if you are balding, make sure you do reach out to Identity and get that hair growing back like Izzy Dag has.
Yeah, look, it's...
Discount codes or?
I'll look after you. Yeah. I'll look after you. You can't. Because look at that lid.
Graying?
Oh, I like
Silver flocks.
Because that's all CJ had, you know. Oh, here is the bald eagle, bald one, blah, blah, blah. I said, well, you're gray. And all you see come back, it's like, I don't care. I can dye that. So dye it.
He doesn't, though, does he?
Nah.
Growing it.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's growing everything. A bit like me now. Yeah, Siege.
Okay, next one. What was going through your head when Pungo got his first win?
Oh, my horse, Pungo. Pretty special moment. Yeah, pretty cool. Like, I've never really been into the horses. I like the odd punt, but when I started working with SENZ, we talk horsing all day, every day.
Yeah.
So it was only fitting. And my good mate Kurt actually bought Pungo. When he bought him at the Ready to Run sales, he brought all his mates in. So there's a good crew of us, Bodie Barrett, cool.
Yeah.
Brendan McCallum, Mark Francis. He's a lady from Wellington called Nikki Cruikshank, and she's like the mother of the group.
Yeah.
We've got Carl Urban, you know, Star Trek.
Sure.
He's Kurt's neighbour, so he's a cool fella. A couple of guys that own Very Elegant, and... so we've got a cool-ass group that's part of this, so we're all on this journey, but, man, it was... such a good moment. Yeah. Like, he won, and then he got entered into Derby Day in Australia. Like, that's the Saturday. They had played 5 group ones on Saturday, and then they had the Melbourne Cup Tuesday.
Yeah.
So we went over and watched him race in his third race.
His favourite, wasn't he?
Yeah, his favourite. Blew
out.
Came 6th, I think. J-Mac on top. Look, it's racing. He raced the other day. He came 3rd. He was favourite again. I don't know. I think I hype him up and everyone follows me. And he's just like, he shouldn't be favourite, he is. But it's pretty cool, man. I hope we're going to have some fun with him.
Yeah. Okay, last question for you. Sorry, I've taken up a heap of your time, a lot more than I promised. But ask everyone this question to finish the podcast. Best piece of advice you have for a Waterland listener?
Oh, best piece of advice. Oh, man, I've been given plenty of advice over my life. Oh, look, I don't have really... one bit of advice that springs to mind for me, but one thing I'd say, and I struggle to do it even myself, is actually find belief in yourself and believe what you are doing is what you can achieve, and anything is achievable. Like, I told the story throughout this whole podcast, like, you know where I come from and the cards I've been dealt. But I never stopped believing, and I never stopped working hard for that goal to achieve it, that anything's possible, you know. It doesn't matter what book you are or what movie that you've been, you know, filming throughout your life, that anything is achievable. So just keep believing. And it's hard for me to say that because I still don't believe in myself. Mm-hmm. But deep down, I just continue to do what I do because I want to get to that end goal. And you may not never achieve it because it's unachievable, but as long as you stay connected and you stay on that path and that journey that you know is heading towards that direction, that anything's possible. So keep believing.
Mate, love it, because, like, as we've heard through this podcast, you've been in that situation. Like, you're in the position where you felt like the dream of being an All Black was sort of too far, but like you said, you keep believing, and even when you got there, you felt, you know, it's all surreal. And
yeah. Have fun too, like.
Yeah, you've definitely done that.
I've had plenty of fun, man. Oh, wowee, what have I done? That's all good, man. It's all good. Waterland Podcast, thanks for having me, bro. You're an absolute champion. I'm proud of you too, man. Like, jumping into coaching is not an easy task, but you're absolutely nailing it, man. And keep up the good work.
Mate, appreciate it. And appreciate you giving up your time and coming on the podcast. And, like, first podcast ever, mate. You're going to be getting a few more requests after this. This is probably the greatest podcast ever recorded.
Oh, I've just missed picking up the kids, but that's all right, mate. I'll be right.
Mate, you're a lad. Appreciate it.
Thanks, brother.
Hey, guys, thanks for listening. And if you've got this far, I'm guessing you enjoyed the episode. So if you did, please give it a share if you can. And also cheers to our mates at Spates for sponsoring this episode. What a life.